NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherlist podcast network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherlist's bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going? We are heading into July. Do you have any plans next week for the 4th of July? I mean, we actually should figure out when we're going to record. That comes on a Thursday.
It does, yeah. I don't have any plans. I have that Thursday and Friday off, so I have a nice little 4-day weekend with absolutely no plans, which is kind of nice. It's been, you know, between work and everything, it's been a very busy and hectic time recently. So it'd be nice to have just a relaxing 4 days. So yeah, whenever you want to record next week, I am good for any day.
Okay. I think I'm going to a party on Wednesday, and then I have no idea what I'm doing on Thursday. There's actually a very good chance that I'm not doing anything.
Okay.
And my work didn't give us Friday off, which I think is stupid. And I think they're just going to wait until tomorrow, or they'll probably wait until next week to tell us we have a furlough day or something, so that they don't have to pay us. And it'll be too late for anybody to schedule a vacation with that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, that'll be terrible. But I'm sure everybody's not going to be working on Friday anyway. So I should also have a 4-day weekend, but I won't be getting paid the same way you are. But anyway, that's Independence Day coming up. We've got a great podcast for you all today. As always, we'll start it off with the news, injuries, and transactions from around the league. Then head over to the 3 up, 3 down section where we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. And then we'll wrap things up with our main topic as we check back in on some advanced stats from the past couple of months, as this is something that we did early in the season in April, but now it's been a couple of months since then. So this should give us a better idea of who we can trust going forward as we continue to get bigger and more significant and meaningful sample sizes. But we'll start it off with the news from this past week, starting with Edwin Diaz of the Mets, who was suspended 10 days after a failed foreign substance check. Before he came into the game. Wow, that was a good start. He came in and his left hand, the one in his glove, was looking very peculiar, and they didn't even let him throw a pitch, which I think that's I don't know who that's a mistake on, but I feel like you gotta let him pitch so that we can see if the spin rates are changed at all, so that like us, sure, the fantasy community can tell if this is like something that he's been taken advantage of. But nonetheless, he's going to miss the next 10 days.
Yeah, either way, I guess a rule was broken, like Carlos Mendoza said, and he's going to miss 10 games. And whether that's the right thing or not, it is what it is. So he's not eligible to pitch again. I think it's until Saturday of next week against the Pirates.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, yeah, it's almost like it's close to like a 15-day minimum IL stint almost. So, you know, just when he was getting back to looking, you know, like his old self again. And I don't know if it's related to the foreign substance or the, you know, I mean, his hand clearly had some stuff on it. It could have, like, I tend to believe him when he's saying it's just rosin. And
it was white. It looked like rosin,
yeah,
to me.
Right. And, you know, I'm not sure why the umps were like, you know, I feel like he could just go wash his hands, or maybe, you know, even beyond that, just the whole rule of getting automatically suspended for 10 games, and especially when they're supposed to like test your glove and see if there's anything on it. And I don't, yeah, that didn't happen. So they didn't ever test what was actually on his hand. So, yeah, it's weird.
Didn't want them to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it should be, I don't know, the whole automatic 10 game suspension thing probably needs to be looked at a little bit closer this off season. But yeah, for now it's, you know, hopefully he can get by. I mean, no one's picked up a save since he was suspended, I believe. Maybe Garrett hasn't yet. So, you know, Reed Garrett's probably the best option for the next week.
Yeah.
Don't really trust Ottavino, and there's really no one else at this point in that bullpen. So other than, Daniel Nunez maybe, but he's probably going to go to Garrett if there's a save chance. So,
oh yeah.
Worth a look for a week, but Diaz should go right back into the role next weekend.
Yeah, Garrett's definitely the only guy to target here, though I would love to see Daniel Nunez get some shots there, but that would be probably the chance of that is very, very low. He's been pitching so well this year, though.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun to watch. Our last bit of news is Devin Williams of the Brewers, who threw off a mound on Wednesday. Today is Thursday as we record. It's possible Williams could return earlier than mid to late July as initially projected, but that timeline is still uncertain.
Yeah, it feels a little bit foolish because there's no, I mean, they got like a 5-6 game lead in the NL Central, and McGill's probably going to make the All-Star team, I would think. Mm-hmm. There's no real reason to rush him back. It's not like this is the Cubs bullpen where they're desperate for help or anything. So I think rushing him back doesn't make sense, but it means, you know, if he's healthy and ready to, and looks good in his rehab outings, then I guess, you know, why waste the bullets in AAA if he's healthy. So for McGill, yeah, it's kind of hurts. I mean, I kind of want to hold out hope that there's like a 1% chance McGill keeps the role, but I know it's not going to happen. Unfortunately, maybe next year we can see what happens with Devin Williams in the offseason. But yeah, this Brewers team, I mean, just I was thinking about like how they lost their manager, they lost their GM, they lost mm-hmm. the best pitcher in baseball. Then you got like Woodruff and Williams have been hurt, and they're still 5 games up in the NL Central. It's kind of been crazy how well this team's been playing.
Yeah, they're just really well built on in terms of depth, I think.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and you see that with the Dodgers, and usually that makes sense for teams with high payrolls where they're paying stars to be their starters, and then the guys in the minor leagues and on the bench would be regulars on other teams, but they're not playing because this team has so many stars. But the Brewers are like, if the Dodgers didn't have a lot of money, had a few stars, and then all the rest of the depth was all these guys that would be starters on other teams and are just unknown in a Brewers organization. But here they come out of nowhere, absolutely crushing it, which has really been dope to watch, especially in the bullpen because we're bullpen guys.
Yeah. Ryan Hudson, an ex-Dodger who, I mean, imagine if Hudson was still in the Dodgers doing this. Yeah. I mean, him and Vesia, imagine him and Vesia as a late inning lefty duo. Oof.
Glad we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, you're happy there. So
totally. All right, that'll wrap up our news. We'll head over to the injuries, starting with Sean Reed Foley of the Mets, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a right shoulder impingement. Reed Foley actually began the season on the IL with the same injury, so this could force him out for longer than the minimum time, considering it's been a lingering injury. Danny Young was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and then the Mets also placed Drew Smith on the 15-day IL with a right elbow sprain. Ty Adcock was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but this Mets bullpen, especially with Diaz being out, is really in shambles right now.
Yeah, it's and like they're getting contributions from Daniel Nunez, like we talked about earlier, and Jake Diekman's still hanging around, and Ottavino's kind of falling apart here. But I mean, even like Danny Young getting called up, he's been pretty effective in his his strikeout rate at least is looking pretty good in his 11 innings. And that's this whole bullpen has really, you know, from a strikeout perspective, the Mets have something going. They have something cooking here with their pitching development, at least bullpen wise, because a lot of big strikeout rate numbers in this pen. And even, you know, Reed Foley was pitching really well before he got hurt. So, and, you know, the next guy, Drew Smith, another one going down, and Smith was pitching really well when he came back. That sounds like it could be a potential long-term injury as well. So now that the Mets are, you know, above 500, I'm sure they're going to be looking to buy at the deadline. So now we can start thinking, you know, Mets for a potential landing spot for some of these, you know, relievers on the move.
Yeah, and you sort of have to believe a little bit in their pitching development from this year because they had that massive change in the front office, bringing in David Stearns from the Brewers, who are notable for being producers of bullpen guys out of nowhere. So if the Mets are starting to do that, it would make sense considering Stearns probably brought at least some of the staff he had in Milwaukee with him. So that'll be something to keep an eye on and to, you know, keep in your mind as you consider Mets relievers. We can't judge them in the way we did before they had Stearns. Now I think this the pitching development is much improved in New York. We'll head over to the Pirates, who placed David Bednar on the 15-day IL with a strained left oblique. The injury was initially believed to be minor, and he nearly avoided an IL stint, but he will land on the IL for at least 15 days. It sounds like he's going to be on there for just the minimum, so he should be back in a couple of weeks. Justin Brule was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but the likely closer in Bednar's absence is going to be Aroldis Chapman, though I've been targeting some Colin Holderman.
Yeah, I do think Chapman's going to get the first chance here, and just experience. Yeah, and experience and all that. And Holderman, they probably just want to keep Holderman in that setup role because, especially if this is going to be a minor, you know, only a 15-day stint. Yeah, I mean, Holderman's not a if you got a roster spot and looking to add some bullpen help, Holderman's been really good for ratios this year, and he's even striking out people at a higher rate. So it's not the worst add. And Chapman for the next 2 weeks, fine. There's a lot of volatility there, but also, you know, potential for a lot of strikeouts and a couple saves. So I get wanting to add Chapman, but by no means is he a must add here.
Yeah, I mean, especially with his off-the-field issues, he's available in my leagues, and I'm just like, I have a rule where I'm not picking up anybody that's got, you know, domestic violence in their past. So that was somebody that I was avoiding. But if you're trying to really win at all costs, there's your guy for saves for this week, at least. We'll move over to the A's, who placed Danny Jimenez on the 15-day IL with a grade 2 left oblique strain. Aaron Brooks was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. He's back in the minors, though, but Jimenez is likely out for the next 6 to 8 weeks, meaning he probably won't return until September.
Yeah. If that, I mean, there's not really, he was starting to kind of figure into some holds chances, but I'm not really, you know, holding my breath for him to come back. I don't think he was really on the holds radar outside of really deep leagues. So hopefully it gives the A's. I mean, there are some interesting arms in that, you know, in the minors there in AAA that they should be calling up and giving looks to. And hopefully this opens the door for some of those guys.
Totally. All right. And our last IL placement is Mark Leiter Jr. of the Cubs, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a right forearm strain. Luke Little was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move after having been optioned to the minors like the day before. They've been doing that. There's no way that guy's got any more options because he has used so many. But nonetheless, Mark Leiter Jr. is out in Chicago, which means Hector Neris is safe for a little longer. I've been really interested in Tyson Miller this past week.
Yeah, he's next. I guess he's the next man up there. He's not really a closer, though. That's like, I mean, on this team, I guess you might have to make it work because Neris has been so bad. And Miller's at least, you know, he's kind of got that.
There's nobody else.
Yeah, he throws from that funky low arm angle and he only can top out at like 90. But, you know, sinker slider guy with not a lot of strikeouts is it could possibly work as a closer. And it's, I mean, at this point, it's worth a chance. I think they were maybe looking into like Drew Smiley being a potentially. No. I mean, there's just so many. I mean, Keegan Thompson, maybe he's kind of interesting. I don't know. It's a mess right now. And who knows what they're going to do at the deadline. So it might stay a mess, at least until, you know, Alzolay and Merriweather get back. It sounds like both of them are starting to get going at least. So they might be back in the next month. So there's that.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'd love to see that. I think Miller is somebody to at least put on your watch list. 25.7% strikeout rate, but it comes with a 16% swing strike rate, indicative of a strikeout rate over 30%. So I think the strikeouts are here to stay, and then it's just about limiting hard contact, which so far he's done pretty well. I think his ICR was 34.2%, which is, you know, middle of the pack, but I think we'll take that if a guy's getting that many strikeouts. But that's a guy to keep an eye on as a potential guy who could take over the closer role on the north side of Chicago. And that will wrap up our injuries, and we'll wrap things up with our transaction, starting with Giovanni Gallegos of the Cardinals, who was activated from the 15-day IL with a right shoulder impingement. He was placed on the IL way back on May 6th. So it's been nearly 2 months since he last pitched. Adam Klopfenstein was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, but Gallegos is back. Unfortunately, there are a lot of good pitchers in this bullpen now.
Yeah, there are. I recently, you know, since like May 1st, this bullpen hasn't been very good. At least, you know, strikeout wise and whip wise. But I mean, Gallegos was pitching, it was horrible before he got placed on the IL, and he's already made one appearance, and his velo is still down around 92. So he's still not, you know, to the 93, 94, where we, you know, usually around like 93.7, I think was what he was last year. So he's still a little down there, and I don't know if he's going to be able to really get away with that. So until we see the velo improve, he's not really a top holds option for me, but Romero and Kittredge and even Helsley have been struggling lately. So maybe, you know, it's crazier things have happened. He could, you know, he could move right back into a holds, you know, situation fairly soon.
Yeah. And sounds like for now, but we're going to look from afar and hopefully he can work his way back into high leverage situations there in St. Louis. We'll move over to Hans Kraus, who had his contract selected from the minors by the Angels. Kraus is a 25-year-old former top prospect for the Rangers, and he was traded to the Phillies a few years ago in the Spencer Howard deal. He hasn't pitched in the majors since 2021, and this is his first year in the Angels organization. He's been pitching exclusively out of relief since 2023, and this year at AAA, 23 and a third innings pitched, 2.70 ERA, a 1.07 whip, and get this, a 44.7% strikeout rate and just 7.4% walk rate. I mean, that's pretty hard to deny. And in three appearances in the majors, he's displayed a mid-90s sinker that he throws up in the zone, which he does so effectively. And then he has a slider, but it hasn't looked that great thus far. And then he's mixed in a few changeups, and by a few, I mean three. But is Hans Kraus somebody that interests you in a shallow Angels bullpen?
You know, maybe in deeper AL onlys for now. Probably just want to get a little bit of a longer look at him. I remember him being having some prospect status back when he was with the Rangers. And then Spencer Howard trade. Mm-hmm. I mean the 44.7% K rate in the minors is great. Let's see, I'm interested to see how that mid-90s sinker works, especially living up in the zone at the major league level. That could be, you know, I'm not sure if that's going to work, but interesting name to keep an eye on, especially, you know, like you said, shallow Angels bullpen who could trade away almost half their bullpen this deadline if they wanted to, because I mean they're going to be selling. So name to keep an eye on, but probably not worth rostering right now.
No, but definitely has a lot of potential based on how he pitched in the minors. We had another minor league call-up as Austin Kitchen had his contract selected from the minors by the Rockies. I mostly put him on here because he had a cool name. and then I looked into his stats because I'm like, why are the Rockies promoting this guy? He had a 3.65 ERA across 24 and two-thirds innings pitched at AAA. That came with a 17.5% strikeout rate. Not great. And then, in classic Rockies fashion, the next day they designated him for assignment, after which he was claimed off waivers by the Marlins. So now Kitchen is on the Marlins. I don't know if that interests us more. He is back in the minors too, so he's not somebody that we can target. But I did want to bring up Austin Kitchen because his name is cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting name. I don't know a lot about him, but cool name. The Marlins are going to probably sell off a bunch of bullpen pieces. Sure. So there could be opportunity for him in the second half.
Totally. All right. And then our last promotion is Yosfer Zulueta of the Reds, who was recalled from the minors. We talked about him last week as he's a flamethrower, and he's also got a 70 grade slider. This is his first year in the Reds organization as a 26-year-old right-handed reliever. At AAA, he tossed 30 and two-thirds innings with a 2.93 ERA, but that came with a 1.53 whip as he walked 14.5% of the batters he faced while striking out just 28.3. So the stuff is clearly there. He's got no control. And the Reds apparently were privy to that as they optioned him to the minors the following day. Graham Ashcraft was called from the minors in a corresponding move. Right now he's back in the rotation, but I remember when we were talking about this stuff last week that I was like, Ashcraft should be the closer. And you've said this for many months that Ashcraft should be the closer in Cincinnati. That's not going to be the case now, but hey, what a coincidence.
And he didn't, he started the other day and didn't look great. So yeah, I don't know why it's going to happen. Eventually he's going to end up being a reliever. Zuleta is a very, we talked about him a little bit when we were talking about velo and minor league guys, and he's one of those high velo, and he spins, has a pretty good slider. Yeah, it's going to be, he's going to be a name you're going to want to know in holds leagues, kind of like Jeremy Estrada. It's like, we just don't know when that breakthrough is going to happen. And when it, but when it does happen, it's going to happen, you know, pretty fast. And you're going to have to, like, you know, jump on adding him quickly because other people are going to, you know, look to do the same because his stuff's electric. It's just, you know, the command and just being more consistent. So a lot of the, like a lot of these guys that throw 98 plus and are just stuck between AAA and the majors. So definitely a name to keep an eye on, but probably not this year, maybe later in the year, but probably more of a 2025 option.
Totally. All right. And our last transaction is Alex Fiedo of the Tigers, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He was placed on the IL on June 5th with right hip inflammation, but he's back. And I think it's a good time for him because the Tigers bullpen is sort of struggling right now with, Alex Langone and the rest of the bullpen not being super trustworthy. So Fiedo being back, who pitched to a 3.38 ERA with six holds across 34 innings prior to the injury, should be a welcome reception for him as he returns back into the holds conversation in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, at least the holds conversation, maybe. I mean, Foley's still kind of getting saves for them. But yeah, hopefully Fiedo was rising, you know, before his injury, so it'd be interesting to see how he looks, you know, coming back from that injury and if he can keep making, you know, headway in that bullpen, because he's not really a typical closer, you know, from looking at his stuff, but there's not a ton of, you know, the options behind Jason Foley right now aren't very impressive anyway, so he could definitely be a holds in the holds mix and or a holds factor for the second half of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping as a former starter, and this is his first year as a full-time reliever, that time, more time in the bullpen will give him better stuff and he'll continue to improve as a reliever. So maybe we'll see the breakout in September, or maybe it'll be next year, but that's Alex Fiedo. And that will wrap up our news, injuries, and transactions from the past week. Now we'll head over to the three up, three down section. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We're heading into our three up, three down section as we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. We'll start with the risers, leading off with Raisel Iglesias, who continues to strike out nobody but keeps getting saves somehow.
Wait. First of all, okay, well, that's why he's rising. But mostly this for this week, the risers and fallers really didn't move much in the ranks. It was kind of a not a lot of movement this past week, but there's some names we should probably talk about because it's been a while since we talked about them or
totally.
There's some interesting, you know, numbers we found out. So Iglesias, you know, yes, he has not been striking people out, but over his last three innings, he has six strikeouts and, you know, his velo is up again. He's now sitting around 90, and that's definitely a correlation between the strikeouts is, his past couple games, he's up to 96, 97 instead of 95, which is where he was sitting most of the year. So if he's 96, 97, there's a lot to like here. That's a big difference between 95 and him getting a little bit more swing and miss. So, yeah, that's a good sign for the Braves and for Iglesias managers out there because, he's probably hard to buy right now. He's probably because he still has good ratios and but if you can, you know, kind of buy, it's not really buy low, but like buy middle, you know, getting Iglesias, that's not a bad idea right now if this velo stays.
Yeah, totally agree. And it looks like it stuck last night as well on Wednesday as he had a 96 mile per hour sinker. And he did strike out two batters in that outing, giving him eight across his last
four.
Yeah. Which the previous six. Previous six outings, he had one strikeout. So four outings after that, directly after that, he struck out eight times as many batters. So, yeah, definitely a good sign.
Yeah, the strikeout rate, I mean, going into this week, his strikeout rate was, you know, 9% lower than last year and 9% lower than his career numbers. So hopefully that starts trending back towards his career numbers and where he was at last year. And if the velo stays, then I don't, you know, I think it could. I think he can get it back up there.
Yeah, I mean, and even without the velo, he's got a 14% swinging strike rate and a 22% strikeout rate. So I think there's still room to grow with natural regression anyway. But that's Raisel Iglesias. Our second riser is Jose Alvarado of the Phillies. He maintains the closer role in Philadelphia and has continued to pitch to relative success.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just him being very solid lately. It doesn't get a ton of, credit because he is splitting the closer role with Hoffman. But in June, Alvarado's got three saves and Hoffman has zero. Hoffman's last save came in back in May. So, you know, I don't think I would be ready to call this like not a committee anymore. But, it's pretty clear Alvarado is going to continue to get the bulk of the saves here. And he's, you know, the walks are down this month. He has a 12-2 strikeout to walk ratio and 8.2 innings this month. And the three saves, the Phillies just really, they haven't had a ton of save chances in total. I know Hoffman's holds are down as well, and as are Strom and Kirkering and all these guys in that bullpen. So it's just been kind of a slow month overall for the Phillies bullpen as far as saves and holds go, but this is a really good team. Those numbers are going to definitely tick back up eventually. So just keep holding out with Alvarado and, you know, even Hoffman if you're in a deeper head-to-head league.
Yeah, and I was actually going to mention the walks on Alvarado as well. The first six outings of his season, he walked six batters in his first six outings. Since then, starting on April 13th, he has walked six batters across 27 and a third innings. That gives him a very low walk rate, and I'm talking 5%, 5.6%. Giving him an elite 21.5% strikeout minus walk rate. I think he's back.
Yeah, I mean, the strikeouts really still haven't been where we've seen him in the past, but they're good. Like, they're still a good number. It's not like the elite 40% strikeout rate we kind of saw him flirt with at the beginning of last season, but he's still been above average closer. And if he was the full-time guy there, yeah, he's probably a top 10 to 12 option as far as closers go. So we'll see if he can pull away from Hoffman potentially. That would make him definitely rise up the ranks.
All right. And our last riser is Carlos Estevez of the Angels. He's been really good across the past month or so. Across his last 9 1/3 innings, he has yet to allow an earned run. He's only walked one batter while striking out 10. And he's actually gone 9 consecutive outings without walking a batter. And that's because he's only walked a batter 3 times this year. And it was in 3 consecutive outings in Texas. And outside of that, no walks from Carlos Estevez.
It's crazy how good he's been this month. And the Angels have got to be so happy because they should get a pretty good, pretty nice piece here in a month for him. So, I don't know what happens with him in August, but, you know, he could definitely still be closing out games depending on where he lands. I think he's really transformed. I mean, the walk rate this year has just been amazing. And now he's starting to, 10 Ks and one hit over 8 innings this month. And the last two times he's pitched, he's been sitting at 98, which is just like talk about velo increases. I'm not really sure if that's going to stick, but if he's like 97, 98, there's a lot to like here potentially. Just depends on his landing spot a month from now. But yeah, someone that we weren't in on at all is really, really looked good the last month.
Yeah, all it took was becoming a completely different pitcher.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's what it takes. Yeah, but the walk rate is just surprising. But yeah, I mean, hopefully you can keep it up.
Yeah, agreed. And that will wrap up our risers. And now we'll head over to our fallers and discuss the closers falling down the ranks. And they sort of have to do that to make room for the guys rising up the ranks. But as Rick said in his disclaimer, not necessarily all followers, but these are guys that we need to check back in on after having not talked about them for a while. Starting off with Ryan Helsley of the Cardinals. He continues to get saves, and a lot of them. He's up to 28 saves, which leads baseball right now. However, the earned run average has not been what you like it to be at, and the strikeouts continue to fall. And I think that makes him a little more concerning than some of the other top tier guys who like have had a lot of success. But I'll let you dive into this, and I'll provide some extra numbers afterwards.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think for him, I mean, he's just been, I mean, the workload's been crazy for him, especially, you know, this is a guy who's dealt with a lot of serious injuries in the not too distant past. So I do wonder if the workload's starting to catch up to him, because over his past 14 innings, he's only has a 10.1% strikeout to walk rate, 1.86 whip, 4.55 xFIP. He's still getting a ton of saves, but nothing. Everything else is kind of worrisome. And it's definitely a time where if you can sell high because people get excited about those save numbers, the save totals, I think you got to do it. But I do have concerns in the second half, just him, you know, not getting burnt out here. And I mean, you don't IL him, but I do think that they need to like kind of pump the brakes a little bit, maybe. But same thing with Jojo Romero. I mean, he's kind of been burnt out too. We've seen that with him and possibly Andrew Kittredge as well. So it's a good time for Gallegos to get back, because those three are just been have such a heavy workload so far this year with all their saves and holds. It's really, they need to, and they're using guys like Ryan Fernandez a little bit more, and you know, I think he's been okay. He's been good enough for, you know, to kind of hold down the fort for them. But I do wonder, you know, how they manage all three of those guys, because Kittredge didn't pitch last year pretty much at all. Helsley, again, injury history, and same with Romero. So be interesting to see what the second half looks like for those three.
Yeah, they're going to have to take it easy on them, because all three of them are in the top 20 in terms of appearances this year.
Yeah.
Each of them with at least 36. Do you think you could guess who's number one in terms of appearances?
Is it Helsley?
Slow pitcher.
Oh, it's Tyler Rogers probably.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He was like that's almost right. like he was last year too, maybe. He can throw, you know, 4 days in a row if they need them.
Yeah. And then TJ McFarlane and Ryan Walker tied for second.
McFarlane throwing like 87 from the left side. That makes sense.
All right. That's Ryan Helsley. Our second faller is Andrés Muñoz, who has not been able to find a lot of control this month and continues to be used outside of safe situations.
Yeah. You got to wonder if he's still, if he's not healthy, because it's just, between the usage and this not being effective at all, it's I don't know what's happened outside of that injury. He before this month he was getting all the saves, and I just wonder if an IL stint's kind of inevitable at this point, because they've been delaying it for so long, and it's just something's wrong, something's not right here with him. His last outing, he walked two guys, hit a batter, and then gets pulled for Tyler Thornton in the ninth inning. So definitely concern here. There's nothing really actionable unless he you might want to maybe – I wouldn't look to trade him or anything. I think a short IL stint probably is for the best, especially going into the All-Star break maybe. That could just kind of reset him. But there's not a lot of, I mean, Stanek's been good, but outside of that, it's kind of iffy, and, you know, they don't get Santos back for another couple weeks. So I'm not sure what happens here, but Munoz is definitely concerning right now, especially the way his velo has just been like plummeting. Yep. It's just like, it's a straight line, just downward.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, because in June, he's averaging 97.8 on his four-seamer and 96.3 on his sinker. Last year, the four-seamer averaged 99.2, so that's a nearly 2 mile per hour drop. And then the sinker last year averaged 98.3,
yeah.
So that's also 2 miles per hour, exactly 2 miles per hour. That's huge.
I mean, yeah, especially for someone like him. I know, you know, the slider's his bread and butter, but the fastball still needs to be up there to for him. So I yeah, I just feel like there's no reason to not. I mean, it just feels like it's inevitable right now that he doesn't miss time, or at least they shut him down, you know, give him another weekend off. But they've already done that. He sat out for a whole weekend plus, and that doesn't seem like that's fixed the problem. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is with him, but it's definitely concerning.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if they still had Brash and Santos, yeah, that maybe they'd have more flexibility there. But yeah, I can't imagine them being scared, like losing Munoz and then having to rely on the rest of that bullpen, which is fine. But without Munoz, it's a huge drop in terms of quality of arms in that bullpen. That is our second faller. And our last faller is Yoan Duran of the Twins, who has not been great this year, and I was trying to figure out why. Rick, what do you have on Yoan Duran? Why is he falling?
Well, again, this is another, and it's kind of been the trend, is, you know, velocity has been a big issue with all these guys, or either in good way with like Iglesias and Estevez, or in a negative way with Munoz and Yoan Duran, who is definitely down in velo this year. But over his last 18 and two thirds, so that's a pretty good size sample.
Yeah.
18 and two thirds, he has a 6.5% K to walk rate, which is just Yoan Duran. Like, that doesn't even, I had to double take, 4.61 XFIP, only 27.5 CSW, just not getting whiffs, or not getting any sort of, just the bat missing ability that, you know, Yoan Duran has had the best stuff in baseball for closers. And it's just not, hasn't been there. He's just become very pedestrian. And yeah, it starts, you know, it has to start with the velo, right? That's, you know, his bread and butter is throwing 102 plus, and he is just, yeah, way down this year from last year. You know, again, this is a guy who's dealt with an injury heading into the year. Wonder if that played into it a little bit. I would like to say that he's just still like ramping up, and but it's a big enough sample size. He's been back for a while now. It's like, when are we going to see him back at 100%? So, definitely something to be concerned with. I guess it's, you know, if you can trade him, if someone's willing to buy, because his ratios look great, he's getting saves, you might be able to, you know, convince someone to take him on. I think you got to look into it. But yeah, I hope he can turn it around, because he's one of the most electric and fun pitchers to watch in the game.
Yeah, he's 1.5 miles per hour down across the board. And that's led to, I think, most of the increase in hard contact and reduction in swinging strikes, though the swinging strikes are still all right at 14% swinging strike rate, which suggests his strikeout rate is currently unlucky. But I mean, if it's so clearly, like, I mean, 1.5 miles per hour is a lot, especially when you're considering you're going down to 100. I don't think it's not like as significant as somebody going from, I don't know, 93 to 92, or from 93.5 to 92. But I don't know, that like last extra mile per hour can do so much, especially when you're a guy who doesn't have great attributes on your fastball. Like his four seamer just does not have good IVB or vertical approach angle, especially when it's height adjusted. And it's gotten even worse this year. It's like the whole shape of his fastball has completely changed. I think that's a bit concerning. It's getting a lot more horizontal break as well. So that may be leading to like missing the zone more often. I think the, let's see, strike rate is down from last year. Wow. But either way, I think the velocity is really playing a big factor into why Yoan Duran continues to struggle, despite still throwing really hard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even just, you can look at like Mason Miller, when he's had a couple, you know, bad outings this year, it's, his velo has been down in those compared to where he's usually at. And it's still like, it's 100, but it's not 102, which is obviously a different, you know, different level. So, yeah, I mean, the good news is he's still throwing 100, and I think he can figure it out and find a way to make it work. There's got to be some adjustments here, and he's kind of toyed with the pitch mix. He's, you know, the four seamers come down a little bit, throwing that splitter more, the splitter more at least. And I don't know, the splitter's good, but it's not going to be his big bread, you know, his big whiff pitch. So. Maybe he's gonna start throwing the curveball more. I don't know. It's it's really interesting to see what kind of changes he makes, or if he can regain that velo, because he's still, you know, he's still young. He's 26, and there's been no talk of him being injured. So, yeah, we'll see what happens in the second half. But him having that low K rate is just so weird to see.
Especially with Jax there. Like, he's at risk of losing his job every day because Jax is so good.
Jax has been good. The rest of that bullpen's got some interesting pieces as well. So, yeah, I mean, if they wanted to make a, you know, or at least like take him out of the role, let him figure things out, you know, it wouldn't be totally shocking, and definitely puts Jax on the radar, I guess, in deeper leagues. Cause yeah, with Jax, at least you're getting strikeouts and good ratios as well, cause he's been so good this year.
Can we spend a quick second on Josh Staumont? The guy has pitched 17 innings this year and is yet to allow a run for the Twins. This is his sixth year in Major League Baseball. He's pitched for the Royals throughout his career. Has not had an ERA below 5 since 2021. And he used to be a pretty decent bullpen arm back in like 2020 and 2021 with the Royals, but hasn't found success the past 2 years. But now he's in Minnesota doing some crazy stuff with a 20% strikeout rate.
He threw, I mean, when he was with 2020 is when he kind of broke out, and it's like, oh, this dude throws 98. And then since then, he's just seen a steady decline in velo.
Now he's
down to 94.8. But he's been throwing his slider a ton. Look at the slider usage way up.
A new pitch.
Feels like a sweeper to me. He's completely changed his approach and he's made it work, but yeah, there's not, the underlying stuff here isn't very exciting. But he's limited hard contact at least up until now. So, interesting to see where his season goes. If he can stay healthy.
Yep. That's Josh Staumont. And that will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, the closers rising up the ranks were Raisel Iglesias, Jose Alvarado, and Carlos Estevez, while the closers falling down the ranks were Ryan Helsley, Andrés Muñoz, and Yoán Duran. Next, we'll move over to our main topic and discuss some advanced stats leaders from the past couple of months. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking about relievers. We're heading into our main topic as we discuss some advanced stat leaders from the past couple of months. As I said at the top of the podcast, we did this at the beginning of the season, like late April, which is a good way to sort of look at who's doing well and if it's sustainable. But now that we have larger sample sizes and we can have sample sizes that are large enough that we can literally just remove that first month, which I think clouds our minds a little bit and can really cloud the numbers as well, as it's a very different time, April, compared to pitching in June. But nonetheless, let's dive right into it. Let's start with the strikeout rate leaders. This is from May 1st through June 25th, which was a couple days ago. Strikeout rate leader since then, Jeremiah Estrada, 46.2%, dominant. I mean, he slowed down a little bit, but the fact that he's been the best strikeout pitcher in baseball for nearly 2 months is pretty cool to see.
Yeah. And yeah, he slowed down a little bit with, you know, the walks are starting to creep back in. Overall consistency needs to be better, but yeah, the dominant, I mean, we talked about him adding a splitter this year. It's been a huge difference maker for him. And yeah, the swing and miss is probably not going anywhere. It's just, you know, is he going to keep the walk rate down? And pretty much that's all. If he can just do that, keep that walk rate down, then I'm all in on the Jeremiah Estrada train. It's, I mean, this stuff's just nasty.
All right. And then our next guy is David Robertson. That's crazy. 44.2% strikeout rate. That's ridiculous. The guy is very old. I'm talking 39. Very old for a baseball player. I'll be nice about that one. But having a renaissance season in the strikeout department, he's been very good throughout his entire career and still at 39, still kicking and getting a ton of strikeouts.
He has, for the season, he's got a 37.8% K rate, sixth best in baseball, and a 36% CSW, fourth best in baseball. At age 39, I was not expecting this at all. I mean, between him and Kirby, I know the Rangers have struggled this year, but it's crazy what they've gotten from Robertson and Kirby Yates. I mean, their bullpen hasn't been the issue, and that was kind of what everyone figured would be, or maybe the rotation, because the rotation was a little hurt to start the year, but the bullpen's been, you know, been fine for the most part, and starts with Robertson and Yates.
Yeah, definitely. All right, and then the number three place in terms of strikeout rate is Alex Vesia, 41.4%. This is a guy we hyped up in the offseason as he was pitcherlist's or PLV's number one darling. And Vesia has come out here after having a sort of rough year last year with a 4.35 ERA. He's got a 1.26 ERA this year, and the strikeouts, I mean, are way up. He's up to 35% after being sub 30 last year. And then to be at 41% for the last 2 months, I mean, Vesey is looking like one of the best left-handed relievers in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy, and, you know, we hyped him up a little bit this offseason, and like the way he ended last year, yeah, the overall numbers from last season weren't great, but the second half he was dominant, and he just kind of translated that over here. He started slow this year. That's why, yeah, these numbers from starting from May look a lot better. And, you know, since May 1st, 41.4% K rate, 0.44 whip, 1.72 Sierra, only six holds on the year. And, you know, I would love to see him get more holds. So that's just the, if you're in holds leagues, that's the one thing keeping him back. But he's still at this point, someone who probably needs to be rostered in holds leagues. He's one of the best non-closer left-handed relievers in baseball. So you know, he and Brian Hudson right now, I feel like, are the two guys. Matt Strom maybe as well. So, yeah, Vezia's the PLV just loves his fastball, and for good reason, crazy IVB on it. Yeah, he's the real deal.
All right. And then to wrap up the top five on the strikeout rate leaderboard, we got Mason Miller at 41% and Josh Hader at 41% as well. At six, we got Fernando Cruz at 38%. And that's good to see, considering he's been a guy who's consistently had one of the biggest, largest strikeout rates this season. And sometimes that can just be inflated by strikeout rates in April. So it's good to see that he's continuing to strike guys out. Aroldis Chapman doing the same at 36.7%. And then we got Ryan Walker at eight, who's striking out 36.7% of the batters he faced. We've talked about him a few times this year, but I think we've sort of underrated how dominant he's been this year. He's got a near 30% strikeout minus walk rate for the season. And just totally dominant, 14 holds as well, and no saves, surprisingly. But Ryan Walker, coming out of nowhere in his second big league season, looking like one of the best relievers in baseball.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's been awesome. I've had him in the top 12 for holds for a while now, because, I mean, he showed some of this last year, but this year's been completely different. And he's getting chances, too, to get holds, which is, you know, a nice change. You know, the strikeout rate is definitely backed up by a 34.1% CSW for the season. You know, and not only that, he keeps the walk rate at 5.3% is beautiful, which has his whip at 0.89 for the year. I mean, there's really not a lot to dislike here. PLV is not a huge fan, and that's because, I mean, for guys with kind of throw, you know, sinker slider mix, it's sometimes, you know, PLV kind of isn't a big fan, and it's like, so his sinker isn't really loved by PLV, but the slider gets really good grades, 5.56, and the sinker does its job. So it's really the slider doing the strikeout work, but sinker's solid as well.
Yeah, definitely. That's Ryan Walker. And then to wrap up the top 10, Craig Kimbrell's at 9 at 36.1%. And then at 10, Mark Leiter Jr. at 35.6%. He's on the IL, unfortunately, but he continues to find a lot of punch outs. And then to wrap up the top 25, I'll just select a couple of names that stand out to me. I think Jose Leclerc at number 13 is pretty interesting. He's at 35.5% over the past couple of months. And he was a guy who started off the season very poorly. And this also makes two Rangers pitchers that are in this top 15, neither of which are the closer.
Well, there's actually three in the top 17 with you, but yeah, neither.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, and Yates is right there at 17. It's
wow.
Yeah, that bullpen has not been the issue. Leclerc, I want to look deeper to see what's changed over the past 2 months, or if he's just, you know, locating better, probably it, but I wonder if he made any changes to his stuff, because he's kind of been a tinkerer in the past. He does throw five pitches, which is a lot for a reliever. But yeah, it looks
he's thrown away the slider.
Yeah.
And gone to the cutter. The cutter's new.
No, I mean, from last year, it looks about like the same. At least looking at Savant, it looks like it's about the same usage. The slider's his best pitch. But his slider and changeup are both pretty good. Get a ton of whiffs, and the fastball is good enough, typically. Just depends on how well he's commanding it.
Same exact usage as last year. Yeah, crazy.
It's surprising, because if you're struggling, and he struggles, you'd think he'd change something up. But,
yeah.
All three of those guys are free agents at the end of the year also, and between Yates, Robertson, and Leclerc, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And what happens at the deadline? Are the Rangers, I don't think they're going to sell, so they probably just...
They have to sell.
I mean,
they're 8% chance to make the playoffs.
So, what were the Angels last year? I mean, not that it's obviously different.
That's not the model you want to follow.
I know. I'm just saying, some of these, they just want, coming off a World Series.
Whatever the Angels did, they should do the opposite.
Coming off, I know.
No, I see what you're saying. I see
and
what you're
got,
saying.
They got Scherzer coming back, and but DeGrom, they could do like potentially.
What the Mets sort of did in the offseason, and they did in the second half last year, where they sold and sort of just looked ahead to the next year.
DeGrom's going to get traded again.
Oh, man.
I guess they could move on from those guys, which would be interesting to see where they land. I mean, Robertson could still, at 39, still could probably bring back a nice piece, nice prospect. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you've got to trade Robertson at least.
Yeah, I would think so. And Yates as well. Yeah. And probably Leclerc.
Why not? Yeah. Trade them all.
And then I don't know who closes there. We'll get to that
next
week.
That's what I was thinking.
We'll get to the trade deadline stuff next week. So spoiler, trade deadline stuff will be next week.
Perfect. All right. And then I've got a couple more names I'd like to touch on. Daniel Nunez is here. I just wanted to point out, still 34.9% strikeout rate. He's been going off, and I think he's going to see more holds across the next week as Edwin Diaz is out, as well as Drew Smith and Sean Reed Foley. So Nunez looking really dominant. And then the last one that I thought was crazy, Michael Soroka.
Yeah, that's
the starter. I know he's not a starter now, but 34.6% strikeout rate. That is ridiculous.
Yeah. Wonder if this is, I haven't really seen what his usage is, but I still think he's pitching in like multi-inning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he just needs an opener. Maybe he's one of those guys. I don't know. Yeah. It's that strikeout rate is, I had to like double check the numbers, but then yeah, he's really just piling up strikeouts since moving to the bullpen,
and a 3.54 ERA.
Yeah, I wonder if something might be there as a kind of a, you know, a guy who just needs an opener, and then he can work the bulk innings. That could be a potential role for him. I could see he's kind of like a Ryan Yarbrough. I've never been huge in Soroka. I know, you know, there's been times where it looked like he was going to be a, you know, potential top of the rotation guy, but yeah, he's just kind of always been middling type starter for me. But maybe in a bullpen role, he could, you know, that strikeout rate really could take
the velocity.
Deep. Yeah.
He's added almost 2 miles per hour on his fastballs out of the bullpen.
That's the bullpen magic right there. Yeah.
That's right. That'll do it. All right. Well, that's a name to keep an eye on. And if you're looking for somebody who can go multiple innings out of the pen, Mike Soroka, somebody to keep an eye on in Chicago. That was strikeout rate. Strikeout minus walk rate, very similar list.
Yeah.
Very similar in the list. Is there anybody else that stands out? The top five is Jeremiah Estrada, Alex Vesia, Josh Hader, David Robertson, Ryan Walker. Literally said every single one of those names on the last one. The top 10 rounds out with Chris Martin, Daniel Nunez, Andres Munoz, Matt Strom, and Brian Hudson. Good to see Chris Martin there, but I mean, this is like his list. He always dominated this one.
He doesn't walk anyone. And who else? Daniel Hudson is on this list. Cade Smith. There was a very good article on Fangraphs today about Cade Smith. I forget who the writer was. I apologize, but talking about Cade Smith's fastball. It's not your typical four seamer. Cade Smith's been. I think he's been the best. I mean, reliever. Yeah, I think it was Ben Clemens. Cade Smith's been the best reliever in that bullpen outside of Class A this year, and don't think anyone expected that to happen. So
no,
what a good find for the Guardians, and just, you know, pitching development there still seems to be a thing. At least getting them to the majors.
Totally. I think the last name I'd like to touch on the strikeout minus walk rate leaderboard is Robert Garcia. He's pretty low in the Nationals bullpen, and he's 25th on this list, but a 25.7% strikeout minus walk rate is elite. And we like to say anything over 20% is elite, so anything over 25% is like top notch. Yeah. And he's been doing that for a pretty significant sample size now. And I think the reason that people don't know about him, one, he's on the Nationals, and two, he's not the closer, but three, he has a 4.56 ERA, which is totally undeserved. The guy has a 2.58 xFIP, a 2.59 xERA, and a 2.55 Sierra. Those are all in agreement that he's a 2.5 like true talent pitcher, and that's because he strikes out 32% of batters he faces while walking just 8%. That's Robert Garcia in Washington, which, you know, I mean, considering the trade deadline coming up, he could see a wide opening there.
This is this is a name, and I, you know, looking it. You know, in my NL only tout, there's not a ton of pitching options, and Garcia's out there. I'm just thinking of adding him just in case, because if Finnegan and Harvey were to get traded, who knows what that opens. A lot of those pitchers in that bullpen could be traded. Garcia's probably not. He still has, you know, I think four years left.
2030.
Yeah. So, and yeah, he's just been dealing with a ton of 371 BABIP. That's been the issue for him. So 33% CSW, 31.5% K rate on the year. I'm very intrigued by him, especially, you know, moving forward and looking towards next year. You know, depending on what the bullpen looks like, he could be an interesting name to keep an eye on. He's from the left side, so that, you know, kind of hinders his potential closer role potentially. And, you know, we talk about IVB a lot now, and his is not great with his fastball. It's only 12.7. So there's, you know, the fastball could probably get a little bit better. And, you know, that's really it, because the changeup and slider are really good. It kind of reminds me of Jojo Romero in a little way, with, you know, a good three pitch mix where he can, if you do have him close out games, he's got that changeup to get righties out as well as the slider for lefties. So, he's a very interesting, deep, you know, potential closer option for the second half.
Totally. All right. That's Robert Garcia. Now we'll head over to swinging strike rate, which should tell us a little bit more about who should be striking out more or less batters. But leading off, Dylan Lee has the number one swinging strike rate in baseball across the past couple of months. He's a lefty for the Braves. I remember you talking about him last year.
I think there was a point where I had him in one of the, either this preseason or last preseason, I was like, had him really high, and I might've just been a little bit early because again, this is another guy who's probably under the radar. Cause if you're in holds leagues, I mean, this is the only way you're looking at him, and he's only got two holds. You know, the AJ Minter's their go-to lefty, and even with him out, it's, you know, Lee hasn't gotten a ton of action in high leverage spots, but certainly deserving of it with a 2.27 ERA, 20.6% strikeout rate on the whole year, or swinging strike rate on the whole year. The stuff's there. PLA 2.21, so stuff's nasty. There's a lot of lefties in that bullpen, so it's tough to kind of, you know, factor into the high leverage work. But he should be seeing more and more holds, I hope, moving forward. Even when Minter comes back, I mean, there's definitely room for two lefties, and he's better than Bummer. He's been better than Bummer. I know. Bummer has been a bummer, because I really thought the Braves were going to – they gave up a lot to get him. I mean, talk about Soroka. they gave up a lot for Bummer, and he's shown some glimpses, but he's still just not consistent. He just lets up too many. He's just going to be one of those guys who constantly has a high BABIP, because – I don't know. It's a sinker approach from him, I guess.
Yeah. Dylan Lee, though, I think he should strike out more guys going forward. I mean, you know, that swing strike rate suggests a strikeout rate like around 40%, and he's at 25% for the season. So I think Lee's somebody that can start trending towards a 30% strikeout rate, and it's pretty interesting. And he's still only 29, which I would have thought he was younger, actually.
he didn't. Yeah, last year was disappointing, and he was hurt and didn't pitch well. And he still has, you know, some team control. And I think he should be. I mean, Jimenez and Minter are your setup guys, but outside of that, I think Lee could be. You know, he's right there with Pierce Johnson. I think depending on matchups, I think those two guys can still have value.
His stuff is ridiculous.
Yeah.
The slider has a 30% swinging strike rate. That's 98th percentile. The four seamer, I mean, you know, not really stand out until you look at his IVB, which is 98th percentile. And then he also, you know, just factors in a changeup that's pretty average and gets, you know, just 23% swinging strikes. So that's crazy. That's a deadly trio of pitches there. That's Dylan Lee, and that places him atop the swinging strike leaderboard ahead of Josh Hader, Jeremiah Estrada, Trevor McGill, and Griffin Jacks. I mean, those have been like four of the best relievers this year. So the fact that Lee is above them is pretty interesting. Daniel Hudson is at six, who you mentioned, and then followed by Andres Munoz, Ryan Stanek, Mason Miller, and Daniel Nunez. So that continues to give us hope for Nunez. And then outside of the top 10, is there anybody that stands out to you?
You know, it not entirely. Some of these guys we've already talked about. It's good to see at least Tanner Scott's on there and still getting swings and swinging strikes. Yeah, I mean, Justin Slayton, we've talked about him a lot. He's been a great, you know, Rule 5 addition for the Red Sox this year.
I think Canely's pretty interesting.
Yeah, Canely's the other one. I don't know. I'd have to check. I don't know how many innings that's at, but I think I left him on.
It's 11 and a third for the season.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if he pitched earlier.
Yeah. So, you know, the stuff's still there with him to get swings and misses, and they're going to need him to be a huge factor in that bullpen. We talked about him and Weaver and that whole bullpen. Ian Hamilton on this list too, even though he's hurt, and Weaver. So you got those three Yankees on here. So those are going to be the three guys, and they're probably going to add, you know, pieces. We talked about it a lot, but, you know, Canely, Hamilton, Weaver are really the guys that they need to rely on behind Clay Holmes right now.
Yeah, I think Canely should be someone who needs to start being added because his ratios weren't great to start the season. And I think he was just getting his feet under him because he was walking a crazy amount of guys. And he's not a guy that's known for his control or anything, but like he was walking just so many batters. There was a period where he walked 4, 5, 6,
yeah,
7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Oh, those are strikeouts.
Whoa.
3, 4, 5, 6. He walked 6 across 4 starts or 4 outings. And then since then, he's not walked anybody across his last 5. So if that's an indicator moving forward that he's going to reduce that walk rate, that's been the only thing holding him back.
Yeah, that's kind of been his thing in the past. He's got a great changeup. I think I saw somewhere it's like he threw like 17 changeups and like no other pitch the other night. And it was like he was like one of three guys to do that in an outing.
Whoa, I see that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, just really elite changeup. And so, yeah, that's going to kind of be, you know, it's going to be hard to not walk people from time to time. But yeah, just keep the walk rate below 10% and he'll be good.
All right. That's Tommy Canely. And now we'll head into our CSW percentage leaders. Yeah, it's sort of our own stat. Thank you, Nick and Alex, for providing us with that one. But we'll lead it off with the number one name, Griffin Jacks at 36.4%. He's followed by David Robertson, Mason Miller, Dylan Lee, and Andres Munoz. And then rounding out the top 10, Sean Jelly, Taylor Rogers, Luke Weaver, Jeremiah Estrada, Sam Henches. And I think Jelly stands out the most there. The 6'11" long reliever for the Giants has actually found some success this year. In his longest stint in the majors, he was once a starter, but really struggled across the past two seasons as a bulk reliever. But here he is finding a lot of success, a 35% CSW for Jelly.
He's been awesome. He's got a funny picture too on our profile, in our profile page with his half mustache. Great. Yeah. That's a look for a guy who's the size of Randy Johnson. He throws only 90 miles per hour from the right side, but he's making it work from that. I mean, he's just got a really good sinker going. And, you know, we talk about starters turn relievers all the time. And he's like another one of those guys we can put into that category that has, you know, really turned things around with the move to the bullpen. Yeah, the sinker, I mean, PLV loves his sinker, curveball. Also pretty good. It's surprising to see that many called strikes with him, but he does have pretty good command numbers, and especially in the minors as well. So he's not a guy who he's kind of like a Chris Martin in a way. You know, Martin's another tall guy, doesn't throw hard. So I think that maybe he could kind of carve out that type of career for himself.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. I mean,
yeah, that's Giants, again, the Giants bullpen is really, really fun. I love I love that whole bullpen. It's if you know, maybe not the best bullpen, but I think like just a fun factor for like I think they might be right up there with anyone in the game right now. I don't know why technically, but like Walker's a funky guy who gets a ton of strikeouts, and Rodriguez, Eric Miller, the Rogers brothers, Duvall. It's just the fun bullpen right now.
That's right. That is right. That's the Giants, and that's Sean Jelly. You should definitely, and when I say you, I'm talking to the listeners, definitely watch him if you get the chance, just because he's so tall, and we don't often get 6'11" pitchers in the big leagues. But that wraps up the top 10 of the CSW leaderboard. Is there anybody outside the top 10 that stands out to you?
Let's see. Michael Kopech's there.
That was what I was going to say. I was surprised to see him there.
I was waiting to see him somewhere. And yeah, I mean, Kopech is getting a lot of called strikes, I think, because his command's been, you know, so shaky that, yeah,
it's scared.
It's like, let's see. It's probably a lot of like 2-0 called strikes or 3-1, 3-0, which I wish there was a way to kind of figure that out. If we could get that, that's a stat I'm going to have to talk to. If we can get a CSW that just takes away like 2-0, 3-1, 3-0 pitches, so I see like called strikes that are just like good like pitches
in competitive counts. It's interesting. You're
right. So because that was like a thing with we'll talk about that maybe some other time because we could really dive into that. But yeah, Kopech being on here is interesting. Robert Garcia on here again. Yeah. He's 25, but again, he's here. Dylan Floro also. Dylan Floro, another called strike merchant. He's not much of a swing and miss guy, but he's getting called strikes. And that's another piece the Nats could probably move on from. Get something, get a prospect for this trade deadline.
Yeah. All right. And that's the CSW leaders, and then we'll go over to some ERA estimators, starting with XFIP. Once again, Jeremiah Estrada at the top. He has been the best reliever across baseball the past couple of months. Behind him, David Robertson, Ryan Walker, Andrés Muñoz, and Chris Martin wrap up the top five. The top 10 include Griffin Jacks, Sean Jelly, John Brebbia, Cade Smith, and Mason Miller. So there's Jelly again. And then outside of the top 10, it's a lot of the same names we've been seeing, but I think it's interesting that Ryan Thompson remains on this list. 2.68 XFIP. He's like a really funky guy, but he doesn't really dominate. He's not a big strikeout guy. Mostly just like a weak contact, low walk rate guy. But the low walk rate has really been the biggest factor for him, because as a guy who did have good control entering this season, 6.5% career walk rate, he's down to 2.5%. That's a 4% drop. That is enormous. What, he's walked three batters this year. Yeah, he's looking like Carlos Estevez.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of he and Tyler Rogers, I kind of put they're in the same boat, same category, being those submarine style righties who don't throw hard, don't strike out a lot of guys, but they're just solid relievers to have that can, you know, you can depend on to pitch pretty much every day if you need to. He's been a workhorse for them as well this year. And, you know, when Ginkle struggled a little bit, and Ginkle's not really right still, so Thompson's really stepped up as the setup guy there. But yeah, him and his teammate Justin Martinez being on here, both you know, Martinez is definitely the more exciting reliever to roster, but Thompson is probably the safer one, who's gonna probably give you better ratios and more holds. So, you know, I know I would roster Martinez because that's the type of person I am. I want the ups. I want to go for the crazy upside. But I totally understand going for Thompson, who's going to be the safer option.
Totally. All right. And that's XFIP. So we'll wrap things up with Sierra. Once again, at the top, Jeremiah Estrada, followed by David Robertson, Ryan Walker, Alex Vesia, and Chris Martin. The top 10 closes out with Josh Hader, Andrés Muñoz, Emmanuel Clase, Daniel Nunez, and Sean Jelly. Outside of the top 10,
there's a name we haven't talked about yet that we probably should.
Go ahead.
Maybe, I don't know, but probably should, but John Brebbia has been on a couple of these lists. Okay. And he does, I believe he's got a player option for next year, I think. So again, this White Sox team's not getting you a ton of saves. They haven't given Kopech a ton of saves, but in the second half, he might be the closer there if Kopech is traded, because Kopech probably gets a better return than Brebbia right now. They might move both. They might move only one. They might move neither. But I don't know. Brebbia has been pitching really well lately, and even for the year, he's got a 25% K to walk rate. So, and a 1.16 WHIP. You know, not terrible there. And you know, the 5.52 ERA looks bad, but you know, everything else is kind of checked out for him to be a pretty average to above average reliever overall this season. So if Kopech goes, he's definitely the best option there if he does stay.
Yeah, he's got a mutual option, and those are mutual. Very rarely exercised. So I assume he's going to hit free agency next year. But in June, John Brebbia has been ridiculous. 10.2 innings, 1.69 ERA, nice, and a 17-1 strikeout to walk ratio across 10 2/3 innings. What the? He's got a 0.25 FIP in the month. That's John Brebbia.
He's always kind of had that. He's had that stuff. I mean, he's been a big strikeout. It's good. It comes in stints. It's never sustained for a full season. That's the kind of frustrating thing. But yeah, the strikeout to walk rate is not terribly surprising for him. You know, what we've seen from him in past stints. We'll see if it holds up, but it's definitely interesting to say the least. I mean, 17-2 strikeout to walk rate this month is wild for him.
Yeah. I assume you're on the same page, but I would suggest any fantasy manager with Michael Kopech on their team to drop him and pick up Brebbia or, you know, anybody else maybe.
I mean, you can do whatever you want with the White Sox.
Really, I'm saying if you're going to focus on this bullpen, Brebbia is much better than Kopech.
For the long term, I would say so. I mean, Kopech did get a save. Was it today? He might have got one today.
Must have been today
because he hasn't gotten one. Yeah. And Brebbia, I think, pitched the eighth. They'll probably alternate, you know, back and forth until one or both is moved. I guess Brebbia is the safer option right now. Kopech doesn't really add much. Yeah, I guess I'll go with Brebbia if I had to.
I think we're avoiding this.
Yeah, it's not really a situation where, I got to go pick up John Brebbia and drop Michael Kopech. It's, you know, if I have time, I might consider it.
That was my guy in the offseason that really worked out.
We talked about Brebbia. Yeah, I mean, I was really in on him too. I thought he was going to, until they moved Kopech to the bullpen, I thought, you know, Brebbia was going to be a sneaky closer. And it wouldn't have worked out either way because the White Sox have just not been getting save chances. Mm-hmm. So, but Brebbia is still pitching. He's pitching well now. So we're getting back. We're getting back to him being a good reliever again.
Yeah, let's hope. And we're also back to the end of the podcast as we wrapped up our review of the advanced stat leaders from the past couple of months. And that was after we talked about all the news injuries and risers and fallers on the closer ranks. But that'll do it for today's episode of the In the Pen podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else you've got going on?
You can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. For now, putting together closing time, hold up, and save plus hold list every week. And, you know, there's probably going to be some sort of trade deadline article that comes out in the next few weeks, as well as our podcast next week should cover the trade deadline, at least the primer, you know, get you up to date on who could be moving, who could take over the roles in certain places. So, that's pretty much all I got working on right now.
Great. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com and more specifically the weekend editions of Pitcherless Daily Podcast, the First Pitch Podcast. So tune into that on Saturday and Sunday mornings for my editions. And then also the Reliever Ranks articles every Monday. I do those. That's a daily piece. And then also Playing Time Analysis over at Baseball HQ. But that'll wrap up this edition of the In the Pen Podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.